I just want to thank everyone that's helped us open the meeting by reading and take this opportunity to welcome those that have joined us since we first started. A warm welcome to any visitors with us for the first time this evening, and a massive welcome to anyone that might be new to Narcotics Anonymous to sit with us tonight. We hope you're going to hear something that's going to encourage you to keep coming back. So yeah, I'm delighted to say we do have a speaker tonight, and I'm just going to very simply say this one thing that if no other addict had walked into these meetings after all the years and the series we've done, this one particular person coming to finding our meetings would have made it all worthwhile, because of where and who they are. So I'm just really grateful for that, and I'm gonna let Tammy introduce her. So Tammy, over to you.
Thank you, Steve. My name's Tammy. I'm an addict.
Hi, Tammy.
Tommy.
Hi, Tammy. Hiya. I had the great pleasure of introducing our speaker this evening. This lady means the world to me. She got clean on the screen. This lady hasn't been to a face-to-face meeting. She got clean on the screen in Hikma. And Hikma was her home group. And she hit the ground running when she came into the room. And she hasn't stopped. She's like a shining light in my life. She teaches me so much about gratitude. And I don't know where I'd be without her sometimes. Her recovery is just amazing. I've seen her come in, light up, and grow and glow and just take it and run with it. So it's my great pleasure to introduce our speaker this evening. Over to you, Lisa.
Thank you, Tammy. And thank you, Steve. Hi, everyone. I'm an addict. My name's Lisa.
Oh, Lisa.
Hi, Lisa.
Hi, Lisa.
Hi, Lisa.
Hi, Lisa.
Oh, hi, everyone. I'm really emotional after that. As soon as Steve started speaking, I started crying. And then just, oh, thank you, Tammy, for that beautiful introduction. You said, and thank you all for being here. I love hearing everyone's voices. Felt very welcoming. My stomach is just in knots, which is so silly because I'm in a room with other people in NA, and I know that it's, you know, no one's judging me. It's like I think it's just like public speaking is always scary. Like if someone had told me when I got here that I would be, you know, like doing public speaking, I would be speaking to a group of people for like up to 45 minutes. Like, oh, reminds me to put my timer on actually. And then I would have never believed you. It's definitely, yeah, it's be scary. But it's one of the big things I've learned from people around me in NA is that, you know, you say yes to service. And I always try my very best to do that. So anyway, yes. So today is my youngest nephew's fifth birthday. And I was thinking about it today. So 4 years ago, I was in hospital, and I'd had like a massive brain injury as part of, I don't know if it's part of all overdoses or my particular overdose, or if it was because of the induced coma. I actually don't know, but this had this bad brain injury. So I was very confused, and I remember I got my phone and stuff at some point while I was in the hospital, and my sister was phoning me. So I spoke to her, and she was saying, it's, you know, it's Josie's birthday today. And it was his first birthday. And I was just like, what? Oh my God. Like, I remember just being like so shocked that it was like already his birthday, but also just, I was 260 miles away from home in a hospital. And my sister and my mom and my dad have been told, you know, she's probably not going to make it. And so they had spent all these days thinking that I was probably going to die. And my sister was having to like have this party for her youngest child, his first birthday. And she was never able to enjoy that. She was so worried about me. And they were trying to figure out how to get me home. And I mean, I wouldn't have been able to go to his first birthday anyway, because 4 years ago we were all in lockdown and we weren't allowed to go to each other's houses. But it was just the fact that I was there and I was taking up so much space in other people's lives and worrying them so much. That when I think about that, it's crazy. And what, and it I like I quite like that my clean date is so close to my nephew's birthday, because it's like this kind of very physical representation of how long I've been clean. Because when he was one, he was very different to how he is now at five. And so yeah, we're growing together. But it's nice to think that I'm not putting my family through that anymore. And I'm, get like building much stronger relationships with my family, because I always think of the disease of addiction as like a disease of loneliness, of isolation, of alienation. I always felt incredibly lonely. Even as a young child, I felt very afraid and very alone, very different. I mean, I don't know why, but it was just, it was just a feeling I always had. And addiction really, really tears people apart as well. So like, once I started using, I thought it was like bringing me together with people, because it was fun in the beginning, right? It was like I was like making new friends and we were all partying, and then things just took a different turn. And I became very, very addicted to well, to a specific substance, I suppose, but not that doesn't really matter a huge amount, but yeah, I became very physically addicted. Well, and emotionally addicted and mentally addicted to one particular drug. And yeah, that completely tore apart my life. Like it took me away from people around me, which is funny because really I wasn't that far away from them physically. I'm housebound and I have been for some years after getting ill at 22. And yeah, so I've had this illness for like 14 years, and it was kind of like a catalyst for my using. I was offered a lot of different prescription medications, and it wasn't like I went into that naively. I would like to add, I didn't go into it thinking like, oh, it's okay, the doctor prescribed this, I just have to take it properly. Like, no, I knew it was not a good idea for me to be taking it, and I knew that I could easily get addicted. But I also felt like that was probably the best thing to do, because now my life had changed from somebody who was healthy-ish, not very mentally healthy actually, but physically healthy and able to do things. And then I kind of turned into this person that was ill all the time. I felt really unwell. I am very physically disabled. It was a very scary time. So I felt like, wasn't that bad of an idea to start, like to start using drugs that I knew were very, had the potential to be very dangerous if not taken properly. So I just, yeah, I just went for it, and yeah, became very heavily addicted to those the painkillers. And it took me down a very dark road. And so yeah, I was physically, I was in my house all the time. I live with my boyfriend, but I mean, before we had our house where we're at now, I lived with my mum sometimes, my dad or my sister, or with Danny's, my boyfriend's mum. So I was kind of going around from house to house. It was kind of a manipulation tactic, and I was stealing from my dad a lot, and or I was manipulating him into giving me drugs. I was doing it with like all my family members, but my dad was easiest to manipulate, and also he had his own supply of prescription medications, so I would steal from that a lot. It just led me to really desperate places, and like I said, it really tore my family up. Like it tore me away from my family. It tore apart my life. It didn't just affect me that I was addicted. It affected everyone around me, and no one could like to end up with no one could trust me. No, like I mean, if I would always know who had like my prescriptions, because at some point my family had to hold my prescriptions. I was not allowed by the doctors, and I would find out, and I would just find a way to get them, you know. Like Danny would go into the shower, and he would leave the door open, and his jeans would be just outside the door, and I would like matrix my way in to like get those tablets out of his pocket and take some. And that just meant I had less for the next day, but I wasn't thinking about that, and I just didn't care about any of that. And I got a lot of, you know, I got a lot of drugs shipped to me, because where I live is a very tiny island called Shetland, and it's very, very isolated and far away from everything. And I was obviously very isolated because I was in my house all the time. So yeah, I would get deliveries of these drugs, and I would just like, I'd just order like a whole ton of like useless crap. So that when all the packages, like, so when the drugs came, there would be multiple packages coming together, and I could hide drugs better if, like, if my boyfriend or my mom or whoever was here, because they just, yeah, they were on to me. I always thought I was really slick, but I wasn't. And yeah, it just really broke down the relationship. And so, like, to start off with somebody who was very lonely, a very lonely person, to like then make myself more lonely by just like creating this kind of disconnect between the people, myself and the people that I was closest to, made me even more lonely. And I stopped trusting them because they were always trying to stop me from taking my drugs. You know, they were always like hassling me. I was like annoyed by them. I just wanted to be left alone. I wanted to be able to take whatever quantities I wanted to take. And I genuinely believed that whatever I was doing was absolutely okay and it was not dangerous. You know, I'd have conversations where my mom was like trying to desperately reason with me. She'd be like, "It says you can only take these many tablets at these times for a reason. Like they prescribed that for a reason." And I remember like arguing with her that she was wrong, and I genuinely believed it. I really did. So yeah, I see a lot of my crazy, and yeah. So yeah, and then and to end up with it, it nearly killed me doing that, because I took medication in the quantity I decided was safe, and it was a big mistake. It was, I mean, I don't even know what where the stuff came from. I thought because something was in a blister pack, you know, like that it was like safe medical grade, you know, like stuff. But no, people can put anything inside blister packs, just to let you all know. Especially if you're not ordering from very reputable places. So yeah, I took something. I took a lot of it, and I didn't think it was a lot, but apparently it was. And I was very lucky to survive it. Yeah, like I said, I'd gone away to a bigger hospital on the mainland, and I had to be induced into a coma. So I don't remember any of that, but I do remember waking up in the hospital, and I do remember having no idea why I was there or what was going on. It was like the single most terrifying moment of my life. And it was also the best thing that ever happened. Because that was what it took for me to finally realize that like I had to stop what I was doing Because I was unhappy. I don't think anybody can be happy in that sort of life. There was no reason to like live or to breathe or to eat or to sleep unless there was drug. Like drugs was all I thought about, all I cared about. It wasn't all I cared about, because I did care about other things. I just didn't have the capacity to care in the way that a person who's not an addict probably. So I was just obsessed with it. It wasn't, like at the beginning when I started using it, like I said, it was fun, but it didn't last for that long. And then it was just like this nightmare I was reliving every single day. Just went on and on. So there was always a big part of me that wished it could be different. I've said this in a few meetings now, people probably getting fed up with me saying it, but I believed it was impossible for me to stop using drugs, like completely impossible. I didn't think I could get clean. I certainly didn't think I could stay clean. So it was never something I really considered with any seriousness. And it was only waking up in hospital and kind of just being brought like face to face with my own decisions and the consequences of my actions. Because like finally this is like a really obvious consequence that was staring me in the face. There was a lot more consequences, but this one was scary because I didn't have any drugs to take. Like I couldn't mask what I was feeling with drugs. Because I was in a hospital and I was, on this I was on the psych ward and I was being very carefully monitored. I wasn't allowed to even close the door when I went to the bathroom. And yeah, it was a scary moment of my life. I detoxed because I'd been in that coma. So I kind of had that initial detox, although like the withdrawals were horrific and they went on for weeks and weeks. Like it was awful. But there was something inside of me that thought like maybe I need to like give this a go and like see if I can stay clean. I think there's somewhere on my phone. I should have looked for it before. I could have read it, but there's somewhere on my phone where I'd started like making a list of reasons not to take drugs. And that was like in my first few days of being clean. This was before I found NA or anything like that. I started like writing this like little list in just in earnest of like, please remember that there are reasons, because it was so frightening to be clean. I just felt so alien and weird, and like everything, doing anything seemed really scary and bizarre. I remember like just even like nurses trying to have a conversation with me, I was really freaked out by that. I would speak to my mom and my sister on the phone, but most of the, like if they start asking quietly, like if they would start asking questions about what had been going on or what I'd done, I'd be like, I can't talk about that right now. I can't talk about that right now. I was in this complete state of like just panic because I didn't have drugs in my system. It was like the first time in, I don't know, like 10 plus years or something. And it was like every nerve ending in my body was like on fire almost. It was just crazy. I just felt insane. Well, do you know what? I didn't feel insane. I didn't feel insane. I actually remember thinking, why have I been doing what I've been doing? That seemed insane, which hadn't happened before. And that was, it wasn't really, I wasn't insane. I kind of started to realize that I had been acting insane. So I probably was the sanest I'd been in a long time. But yeah, I was just an absolute mess. My dad had to come and get me because I couldn't travel on my own because of my health conditions and stuff. I need someone to be there to take care of me. And so my dad traveled all the way down to Aberdeen where I was so that we could get on a ferry and spend like 14 hours on that to get all the way back home to Shetland. And he likes to remind me every time I speak to him that he felt like he was in The Exorcist when we were in that cabin together. He's always like, I'm pretty sure at one point your head started spinning around But you know, he's probably right. I mean, he probably was pretty horrific for him. Yeah, so I was still clean, and I really did wonder if it was something I could do. It was also very frightening because I was at that point where it speaks about in our readings where, like, I could no longer live with or without drugs. So I couldn't live with them anymore. It was just like shit was getting too fucked up. But I also didn't know how to live without them, and it felt unbearable. But the hours were so, like it was every minute of time seemed so long. I just didn't know what to do. And I was frightened, and there wasn't a lot of support in terms of like, health places and stuff up here. There really wasn't any help offered. And I've seen like every sort of therapist and person like that where I live. Like I've gone through most of them because I was always trying so desperately to find something to help me. And it's not to say outside help like that doesn't help. It helped me in lots of different ways, but none of that was ever sufficient, as it says in our readings, sufficient to help me. I needed more, but I just didn't know what that was. And that's when I discovered NA. So I just typed into Google one day, help for addiction in Shetland. I was so desperate, I can't tell you. And the first result that came up was the Highlands and Islands groups of Narcotics Anonymous. And that was the first moment that I realized that NA was an actual thing that I could go to. I mean, I'd heard of NA, but it just never really been something I seriously thought about. There's no like physical NA meetings here. Well, so that probably had something to do with it. The fact like why I didn't think about it. But yeah, so I kind of had a look on the website and I was like reading bits of it and I was like, oh my God, because there's like bits to read on the website. So it gives you kind of like the initial readings that we do in our meetings at the beginning. And I just kind of thought like, oh my God, this is like crazy. Like I couldn't believe there was other people who were in the same position as me. And yeah, so I guess that was when I kind of that it first started working its magic on me, and I went to my first meeting. It was like an online meeting, just like tonight, and yeah, it was a great experience. I mean, I don't actually remember much. Oh God, I was a nervous wreck and blacked out, I think, I remember being really struck that like I'd found something really special. I was like, oh, this is a very special thing. Like, just people talking honestly and openly about addiction, using and feelings, like just talking honestly about your feelings. I'd never met anyone who did that before. Like, and I was like, oh my God, I feel like that too. Like, I was just like the whole time when people were sharing, I was like, oh my God. And I just felt so overcome with that that I felt like I had to message everyone and tell them exactly what I related to so that they understood that I was the same as them. like I was just so overcome with it. And yeah, so I went to that first meeting and I've been coming here ever since. So yeah, I just celebrated 4 years on Thursday. 4 years clean, 4 years with Higna, 4 years with NA. And I feel just as blessed today to have found this. And I still feel exactly the same that this is something so special. In fact, today I think it's even more special than I ever have before. I feel so. I don't know. I guess it's like, alienation, the loneliness that I was feeling, like as lonely as I felt, is like now how grateful and blessed I feel. I don't know how to put that in any better English. I'm sorry. But like that, it's kind of like I was so alone and lonely my whole life, and I don't have to be anymore. I remember like in my first meeting, and every meeting that I went to, people would say, you know, never alone, never again. And to begin with, I did think it was bullshit. Because I thought, like, I've tried a lot of things, and like, yeah, I always end up alone though, don't I? Like, it was weird. I couldn't, it felt odd to believe that I would never be alone again. I couldn't wrap my mind around that. And today I do believe that, and I know that to be true. Since I found NA, I have never felt that depth of loneliness. I haven't felt alienated. I've had moments where I feel lonely, sure, like I think everybody does, but I think it's probably just normal feelings of loneliness that like non-addicts get. I don't feel alone, like that deep in my soul, like just like I'm alone and I need something to stop this. Like, I don't feel like that anymore. And yeah, it's because it really is true. Never alone, never again. There's always a meeting to go to. You know, there's always a meeting. And I know we're especially lucky now after COVID, because there's, you know, online meetings have popped up all around the world, thousands of them. And that's an amazing thing. I know Hignon was online before all of that COVID stuff went down. And I've completely forgotten what year it was, 2011, I think. I can't remember. I'm sorry. That yeah, that Hignon was started. So well before any pandemics, but we're, yeah, but it's like there's so much online now. So if there is not a Hignon meeting on, I can go to a different meeting. You know, there's other meetings to go to, and I've been to lots of other meetings all around the world, and met amazing people all around the world, you know. But like Hignon is really where I feel like, I mean, it's my home group, but it's like I feel like this is where I just feel like it's family here. You know, I came to the Hignon meetings that were on every single day anyway, from when I first came to, from the beginning of when I was at my first meeting, I was then going every single day. And I was just so find it hard to find the words. I was just like so overwhelmed by like every person that was coming to the meetings. And like there's a lot of people that attend Hignon meetings. Like we're all, there's a few of us that are at like kind of every single one of the meetings a week. So like I got to know these people like really well, but like over time. But I was so kind of like enveloped by it all. And like I just had this kind of love and support, which was amazing. Like I think it's like the just how welcoming it is to come into NA as well, and this particular platform was set up for people who live in isolated parts of Scotland. This HIGNA stands for the Highlands and Islands Groups of UK, UK NA, and so like. I feel like everybody was really excited when I came because they were like, we're finally reaching the islands. Because although it's for the Highlands and Islands, there's not many of us that are actually in the Highlands or Islands. It's a very global kind of group, and kind of got people from all over the place. But yeah, I think people were, I was really embraced and, I mean, I suppose as well, people could see that I really, really wanted to do this. Like, I was so shocked that anything like this existed because I had no idea. And I think, what really attracted me to NA was just like the fact that it's like simple. It's really, it's simple and straightforward. There's that was very attractive. And there's another thing I was going to say. Oh yeah. And that I wasn't being like told you have to do this or you're gonna die. like it was very different than any, like I said, I'd been to therapy and drug therapy and all different things before. It was very different than that. It wasn't like, therapist and patient. It was like we were all equal. Like, what a novel idea. I was so amazed by that. And so like nobody was kind of like lording it over me, telling me like you have to do A, B, C, and D and all these things, unless or you're gonna like relapse and die. Like it wasn't like any of the experiences I'd had before with the help that I'd looked for in trying to stop taking drugs. It was very different, and I was hearing lots about this new way of life, like I was hearing that people had learned to live life on life's terms, and that, that people are now able to kind of cope with life on life's terms because they work the steps, and I didn't really know what any of that meant, but I decided I was willing to give that a shot. To be honest, I didn't, this is, yeah, to be completely honest, I didn't think that it would work for me. I really believed that it worked for all these other people, but I didn't believe it would work for me. But I said to myself, like, I'll give this a year and see how I get on. And that seemed to work for me okay. I mean, but I just like you hear so much great stuff from people. Like I was just getting amazing information constantly just by being in a meeting every day and being in contact with other addicts in recovery. I was just hearing so much, and my sponsor says this to me a lot, but like I was like a sponge. I was soaking everything up, and I really was at that point. Like I'm really just soaking everything in. Just like I was so fascinated by what people were saying, and I loved everything. I loved that when people would say it's just for today, just keep it in the day. I loved that. I loved the whole idea of surrender and acceptance. It was all things that just made sense to me. Yeah, it all just made sense. And I liked all of those things that I was hearing. And I related to a lot of like when I would read about the insanity of addiction, I remember being blown away because I'd never heard anybody use that term before, the insanity of addiction, and like how insane we get when we're using. I'd never heard it put like that. I remember, like, I think I kind of referenced it earlier, but like when I was in hospital, I like was like, have I lost my mind? Have I gone insane? Like, why have I been killing myself? Why have I done this to myself? I had a lot of like questions like that. Like, why? Because I felt insane. I felt like I must be insane before I'd put my body through this, put my family through this. So to hear, to like, or to read or to hear about this idea of the insanity of addiction, and that, that's just what happens. A drug in an addict and we go mental. It made so much sense to me. It was just like, I loved that. It was just things like that, and yeah, so I found my sponsor, and she's been my sponsor for my whole time clean. I think it's been really important for me to have a sponsor who I really, who I just really trust and love and feel really loved by. As a, you know, she's kind of like my anchor, in any, you know, and well, actually in life. But yeah, I just feel kind of anchored by somebody. I've got like somebody that is, well, I mean, we've gone through all the steps together formally. I've worked the steps, and that was an experience, and that was very life-changing actually as well. It was a lot of written work. I mean, I did it through the Step Working Guide, and it was a lot of written work. But for me, it was a great, you know, it was a great experience because it really got me to know me. You know, I got to know a lot of parts I don't like about myself, but I also got to know a lot of parts that I actually think are okay about myself. You know, like there's parts of me that aren't so bad. You know, I have a more realistic overview of who I am, and I think that's a big part of working the steps is to kind of get that humility of like an accurate look at my assets and my liabilities, and not making myself worse or better than anybody else, and just staying as a human being. You know, yeah, being just doing the written work and then reading that out to my sponsor, it was all just a very amazing, healthy process for me. And it taught me that I can do that, first of all, because I didn't think I was going to be able to do the steps. It sounded very overwhelming and like a lot of work. And I saw the book, the Step Working Guide, and I was like, oh my God, I'm never going to get through this. But and it got to that point, like in step four, I did actually stop. I stopped and I was like, I can't do this. This is going to take forever. It's too overwhelming. And I think I procrastinated on that for like a month. And then I did eventually admit it to my sponsor, and she just said, like, why don't you try setting a timer, 15 minutes every day, and just write for that 15 minutes, and then when the timer goes off, you stop. And so I did do that. And guess what? I was able to finish my fourth step just doing that. It was a really helpful piece of advice, actually. You know, my sponsor speaks a lot about doing things in small, manageable chunks, and it's something that this is a concept I'm only learning now in recovery. I was actually speaking to my friend yesterday, and she was speaking about her uni stuff and being late for her uni work, and I was saying, oh, when I was at university, I used to just do it like the day before. I would just get it all done, cram it. But then I was like, also, that was a nightmare. So yeah, don't do that. And that's what I was like. You know, I just wouldn't do something, and I'd try and do it all at once, and it'd be really overwhelming, and I just wouldn't want to do it again. And it's like I've been learning how to do things in these small, manageable chunks, like doing things over time. And I've learned that I can do a lot of things if I do it like that. You know, like I've started reading a lot more, like reading for pleasure, not just because I've been reading a lot of NA literature since I got here. But I stopped reading all any and other kind of books. And yeah, I've been trying to like read, you know, even if it's just one book, I'll read like 2 pages at a time each day. And I've read like loads of books this year, and it's really good for my self-confidence. I don't know, I just think it's been really good for me to realize there's another way for me to like to do things. So I'm like going all over this. I do apologize if it's like hard to keep up with me. I was saying I've done all my my gone through my steps formally with my sponsor, and like all of this is all been, you know, over the phone, or you know, online over the phone. That's the way my recovery has been. And I don't, you know, I never really think like I'm missing out. Oh, you know, like a lot of people who kind of say to me that it's such a shame I can't go to face-to-face meetings and that. And like, don't get me wrong, I would love nothing more than to be in a room with all of you guys right now. But I don't feel like I'm missing out. I feel very blessed to have the connections and the relationships that I have in my life today. You know, there's a lot of people that were in my first meeting that I'm like super close with today. I mean, my sponsor was there my first meeting, and or even just like the first few months of meetings. You know, I'm still friends with a lot of the people that were there. I think it's like I realized that I needed to just like build friendships up over time and just like give my time to people and work on friendships because I just knew I needed you guys. And so yeah, I just kind of built up relationships over these last 4 years, and I feel like I've got really loving, strong connections. With women and with men, I know it's like we do say in NA, you know, women with the women and men with the men, but there's a lot of really important men in my recovery as well. I feel like I've been really lucky with the people that are in my life. Because I learned so much. And I feel so. Like just I feel so loved and supported. Have I already said this? I'm probably making no sense. No, I'm not gonna let the self-doubt creep in. That's what's happening. I've been going through a lot of self-doubt, which is just the disease of addiction. I can hear my sponsor saying that in my head. That's one of the good things about recovery, is that like when you speak to people often enough, I speak to my sponsor fairly regularly, once a week, if not more. Yeah, then, you know, like when you're around, you know, listening to people all the time, you start hearing them in your head. So that can sometimes overcome the voice of my addiction. Because I've got that, you know, annoying, the disease of addiction talking and telling me, like, shut the fuck up. Nobody cares about what you're saying. Like, this is boring. You're not making any sense. And then I just take a pause. And I'll hear my sponsor saying something, or I'll hear, you know, somebody else, like just like a lot of the you guys that are in this meeting, like I'll hear your voices in my head. And I know that can sound a bit crazy, but it's not. Like I can hear certain things that you say, which I just think is magical. And that is, you know, that's my higher power coming in, and not letting me get taken over by the disease of addiction. That is a negative chatterbox, and I don't wish to listen. I just take a breath and like center myself. So yeah, but I mean, I was just mentioning higher power there. It's like that's like something I have today. I have a higher power, which I would have thought was crazy. Thought that was crazy before I came into recovery. You know, I was never into any sort of spirituality, and I certainly wasn't brought up with any religion particularly. It was around me, like at my school, and you know, if I went to Sunday school, that kind of thing. But I wasn't, none of my family are really religious, so yeah, it was something I kind of looked down on, if I'm honest, who had beliefs. Weird, because I looked down on it. I think there was a part of me that was also very envious of it. You know, I got here and I was a bit freaked out when I heard the word God mentioned. But I also heard other things, you know, and you know, when I, you know, I would hear people sharing about, you know, like it's God of my own understanding. It's not about believing in the God we tell you to, or this person says, or you know, your sponsor says. Like I never heard that. I was from the beginning, I heard it very clearly that it was the God of my own understanding. And so I felt like that was very freeing and really amazing because I'd never thought, it'd never been a thought that had come into my head ever in my life that I could have a God of my own understanding, you know, believe in what I can believe in and what I think is real. Like, I never knew that that was an option. I just thought you either believed in one of these religions or you didn't, you know. And I, by the way, I don't ever mean to say that religion is bad because I know for some people it works and that's great. It just didn't work for me. But yeah, so I've kind of started to like I nurtured my, I've kind of started to nurture my own belief in a higher power. And you know, it really in the beginning it was really just the group. So it was like you guys being in a meeting, and that still is a part of my higher power. But there's deeper layers to it now, and like it makes sense to me. Well, no, it doesn't. I mean, it's weird, isn't it? It makes sense to me, but also I try not too hard to, I try hard not to analyze what my higher power is or what I, you know, that kind of stuff, because the more I pick at it, the worse I start to make life for myself. Because I can just make myself crazy with my overthinking. And I find that I don't have to understand my higher power. And this is what I heard from other, you know, this is everything I'm saying about NA is what I've heard from somebody else, probably. But yeah, some, I remember hearing somebody say, I don't, you know, but my, what was I going to say? The higher power of my own understanding. I don't know, higher power of my non-understanding. Something, there was something somebody said that basically was like, I don't understand it and I don't have to. And when I heard that, I was like, oh, wow. Like that was amazing for me. Because I can see that there are higher powers at work, right? I mean, I didn't have anything to do with the creation of like nature, or like stars, and I don't know much about any of that. And so, like, I could see that, you know, like, logically, there are definitely higher powers. And so that's kind of where I started, and that made sense to me. I don't understand it, but like, it's a real thing. And something brought me here to all of you guys. You know, something brought me here. I didn't just come here on my own. Like, I don't believe that for one second. It was like divinely led. For whatever that means, I was guided in this direction. I really truly believe that. I really do. And so, you know, we speak a lot about prayer is asking for God's help and meditation is listening, you know, for God's answer or whatever it is. And I don't know about you guys. I don't hear like anybody, any like God voices talking to me or anything like that. But I do know that when I come to a meeting, when I speak to my sponsor, when I speak to another friend in recovery, I'm going to hear something that I need to hear. And I see that as part of my higher power. I find that a really important part of getting connected, you know, like just reading the literature. I always feel like my higher power is, you know, within those words. Whatever thing I read in there, I always feel more connected. I was my sponsor encouraged me really early to like, you know, pray. You don't have to pray a certain way. You don't have to pray to a certain God, but try and just pray and just ask, you know, for the help to stay clean just for today. And so I did start doing that. And then my sponsor kind of encouraged me to get a morning routine going, you know, and because I had no routine. My routine was like whatever amount of drugs I had, my routine would be dependent on that. So if I didn't have many or any, I was going to sleep or try and get more. And if I had lots, then I was just going to be lying in bed like really high. So that was my routine. So yeah, I had no routine. And it's like it's really important for me now to have that every morning when I get up. I think, like, because the disease will get on me straight away, and I'll feel like, oh, I don't want to get up. I don't want to do anything. I don't want to do this again today. I hate praying. I hate meditating. And then I'm like, no, do it. You'll feel better for it. And so I'll do it. And I always feel better for it. It's amazing, isn't it? I get up and I pray and I meditate. I started doing some breath work stuff and like some really gentle stretches. I read from our literature every day. I journal every day. I've started doing a daily step 10 inventory as part of my morning routine. Like I add little things to it all the time. I like to, connect with other addicts in recovery, whether by phone or by message or whatever way, voice notes. That's something I've been introduced to since coming to NA. And I like staying connected with my sponsor. I like having a meeting to go to every day. I find that very important. I like being of service. Oh my God, there's so much I could have shared on about service and I forgot. I really probably should start writing notes for myself. I always think that like shouldn't do that, but I do forget key things like the entire area of service. Service has been so important to me. I have regular service that I do at certain meetings, and I've done service area for a few years now. And like I said, if I'm asked to do a main chair, I will say yes, as long as like I can say yes, but I will always say yes. I will, if I can't do it that time, I will tell them I'll come back and do it the next time. I like to be of service. It makes me feel useful. Because I felt like a really useless piece of crap for a long time, things being the way they are with my physical health, I'm very energy, like a very energy limited life that I have, and like I've not been able to do much. I can't do housework or can't go to work. So, I felt pretty useless for a long time. But put addicted to drugs in there, and you feel really useless. But I've been able to like help people. Like, even if it's just like helping somebody because they can't do their service, I can like jump in and say, I'll do it. Yeah, I'll do it. And Steve at the beginning, he introduced Tammy. He really was a massive help in getting me involved in service. He really like figuratively, he really took my hand and was like, right, you can do this. Let me help you. Yeah, as a femme, I've had so many opportunities open up to me over these last 4 years. I'm just so grateful for each and every one of you. I cannot stress that enough. I'm so thankful for NA and for all that it's given me, and for Higna, for reaching me, and thankful for all of you and all the service that you all do. I love you. I'm going to leave it there.